So, welcome to today's deep dive. You know, usually when we think about a financial crime scene, there's this clear expectation of a really shady environment, right?
Right, yeah. Like a dark alleyway or something.
Exactly. You picture a dark alley, a burner phone, or maybe, I don't know, a brief, super nervous interaction on some anonymous dark web forum. Mm-hmm. And the authorities can just point at it and say, well, there is the danger. Just avoid that place.
Okay.
Because a dark alley is obviously a dark alley, so your guard goes up automatically.
Yeah, I mean, we prefer our threats to be obvious. When danger is clearly categorized, it takes very little cognitive effort to protect ourselves. You simply just don't walk down the unlit street at 2 a.m.
Right, right. But then you step into the world of modern digital platforms, and specifically the ecosystem we are exploring today, and suddenly, you know, that dark alley isn't an alley at all.
No, not at all.
We're looking at a multi-billion dollar crime scene that is just flawlessly disguised as your own living room.
It's wild.
It really is. So we have a massive stack of source material today detailing how Facebook has, well, unintentionally morphed from a place to share your vacation photos into an unusually complete end-to-end infrastructure for global financial crime.
Yeah, that's exactly what the data is showing us.
So we're going to break down how criminals use the platform's interconnected features, you know, ads, community groups, marketplace, messenger to spot victims, build deep trust, and basically extract their life savings.
And all without ever forcing the victim to leave that one comfortable ecosystem.
Exactly. So before we get into the mechanics, I mean, we need to talk about the scale of this.
Well, the sheer scale of what is happening, it requires a complete paradigm shift in how we view digital fraud. I mean, we are no longer dealing with isolated Nigerian prince emails here.
Right. Those feel almost quaint now.
They do. The 2025 U.S. Federal Trade Commission data we're analyzing today, it paints a very bleak picture of this new reality. So scam losses that explicitly started on social media, they hit $2.1 billion in a single year.
$2.1 billion. I mean, just let that sink in.
Yeah.
That is an eightfold increase from the 2020 data.
Yeah, the trajectory is practically vertical at this point.
It's terrifying.
And nearly 30% of all individuals who reported being scammed said the initial contact happened on social media. And, you know, Facebook is the undisputed heavyweight in this arena.
Wow.
The reported financial losses originating specifically on Facebook actually exceeded the combined losses from text message scams and email scams.
That statistic is just wild to me. More than texts and emails combined. So to wrap our heads around how this is mechanically possible, I want to use a core analogy today for you as we go through this deep dive.
Okay, I like analogies.
Think of Facebook for criminals, like a fully self-contained, incredibly luxurious shopping mall. Scammers don't have to lure you out to that shady alleyway anymore.
Right. Why leave the mall?
Exactly. Within this one digital mall, they can identify your demographic, learn your personal habits from your public profile, pitch the con through a highly targeted sponsored ad, and process your money. And they do all of this while, you know, the virtual lighting is good, familiar music is playing, and your actual friends are walking around right next to you.
What's fascinating here is that the issue we are looking at isn't a single technical vulnerability, right?
Like a hack or something.
Exactly. It's not a broken line of code or a firewall that some hacker breached. The crisis exists because social trust, hyper-personalized targeting, and frictionless digital payments have all been flawlessly integrated.
It's the intended design of the platform.
Exactly. The platform built this architecture to allow legitimate businesses to build trust and reach niche audiences at an unprecedented scale.
Right.
Criminal syndicates simply realized they could use that exact same infrastructure to scale deception.
Yeah, so they are using the tools exactly as they were engineered to be used. I mean, the algorithm doesn't know the difference between a real shoe brand and a fake investment fund. Right?
No, it just knows how to find the people most likely to click on the ad.
Which is just chilling. So let's look at how they actually acquire these victims. Based on the 2025 FTC data, over 40% of social media scam victims reported the incident began with a product advertisement.
Paid ads really are the tip of the spear here.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. You'd think people would spot a fake ad.
Well, criminals heavily leverage the paid advertising engine because it gives them access to the exact same behavioral targeting tools that legitimate corporations use.
Right.
They aren't just, you know, putting up a billboard on a digital highway hoping a susceptible person drives by. They are aiming a fraudulent campaign with laser precision.
So they know exactly who they're looking for.
Yes. They target based on age brackets, geographic location, browsing behavior, or even, and this is crazy, how long a user pauses on a video about financial planning.
So if you, as a user, have spent the last 3 weeks reading articles about artificial intelligence, or maybe you're watching videos about inflation because you're worried about the economy.
Yep, the system takes note.
Suddenly, boom, a sponsored post slides into your feed for a revolutionary new AI crypto trading bot. And it usually features like a deepfake endorsement from a tech CEO or a recognizable celebrity.
Right, because the ad algorithm actively seeks out the users who are most primed to be receptive to that specific narrative.
It's doing its job perfectly.
Exactly. And once clicked, the ad directs the user to a cloned website or a private messaging group where the psychological manipulation really takes hold. And a very common mechanism here is the fake dashboard tactic.
Oh, man, the fake dashboard. When people hear about someone losing their life savings to a fake crypto portal, the immediate cultural reflex is to blame the victim, right?
Oh, constantly.
People think, you know, how could they be so gullible? But reading through these case studies we have today, you realize almost anyone could fall for this. Because the scammers aren't just telling a lie.
Right.
They're building a literal Hollywood set.
Yeah. It's incredibly elaborate. The victim logs into a portal that looks indistinguishable from a legitimate Wall Street trading platform.
It looks so professional.
It has live ticker tapes, professional typography, responsive customer service chat boxes. I mean, the whole nine yards.
It looks incredibly real from the front. So, you know, you make an initial small deposit, maybe $500, and 2 days later, the dashboard shows you've made a 20% profit.
And here is the trick.
Right. The real kicker is that the scammers actually let you withdraw that first batch of money.
Yep.
You put it back in your real checking account. And that specific action completely short circuits your critical thinking. You tested the system and it worked.
Exactly. Because you're holding the cash.
Yeah. It's only after that cognitive dissonance is resolved that they ask for the massive deposits or suddenly claim, oh, you need to pay a 30% capital gains tax to release your next round of funds.
Which is all fake.
Completely. Behind that beautiful dashboard, there is no investment algorithm. There is no trading floor. It's just painted wood and scaffolding holding up a screen.
Right, because the psychology of the user interface is the actual weapon here. The goal of that fake investment portal is explicitly to control the victim's perception of reality.
Wow.
If a beautifully designed, authoritative-looking screen tells you your crypto is up 40%, your brain releases dopamine. You just believe the screen.
You trust the UI.
Exactly. But, you know, this manufacturing of reality isn't just limited to complex investments either. We see the exact same manufactured commerce on everyday features like Facebook Marketplace.
Oh, yeah. Marketplace. That's where this hits the average person who's just looking for a used car, a rental apartment, or concert tickets.
Right.
The scammers create this artificial urgency. They list a highly desirable apartment at a slightly below market rate.
Too good to be true, but just plausible enough.
Exactly. And when you message them, they claim there are like three other people driving to look at it right now, and they need a holding deposit via wire transfer to secure it for you.
Or they weaponize the platform from the buyer side, too. Fraudulent buyers will contact a legitimate seller and claim they're sending a courier to pick up the item.
Oh, I've heard of this one.
Yeah, so they send a sophisticated phishing link that's disguised as the courier service's tracking page, demanding the seller pay a small, supposedly refundable insurance fee before the driver can be dispatched.
Right.
But a massive mechanical red flag in all these marketplace interactions is the scammer aggressively trying to move the conversation off the platform.
Always.
Usually to a standard text message or personal email.
Because, if we go back to the analogy, as long as they are operating inside the digital shopping mall, mall security, which is the platform's automated moderation tools, well, they might flag the keywords they are using.
Exactly. They don't want security listening in.
Right. They have to pull you out into the unlit parking lot to execute the final transaction. So ads and marketplace listings are highly effective ways to target strangers. But the data shows the most devastating financial and emotional damage occurs when criminals wear the digital face of someone you already know.
Okay, yes. We are talking about compromised accounts and the concept of inherited trust. This is really a cornerstone of the modern fraud ecosystem.
Okay, let's unpack this. We've all seen a friend post a status saying, you know, don't accept a new friend request from me. I've been hacked.
Almost everyone has seen that, yeah.
Usually, criminals gain access to these established accounts through phishing links, credential reuse from other data breaches, or hidden malware.
Mm-hmm.
And the analogy that kept coming to mind while reviewing this research is just terrifying. It's like a burglar breaking into your house,
right?
But they don't want to steal your television.
Right.
Instead, they put on your clothes, sit on your couch, wait for your family to come over, and then ask your relatives for an emergency loan.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, a brand new account created yesterday with zero friends and no photos, that triggers immediate suspicion.
Obviously.
But an account that has been active since 2012, that carries a decade of inherited trust. The criminal logs in, but they don't immediately start spamming links.
They're patient.
Very. Mm. They run scripts or manually scroll back through years of private direct messages to analyze exactly how the victim speaks.
That is so creepy.
It is. They learn the nicknames used for family members, the typical cadence of their sentences, and then they message a sibling or a close friend asking for emergency money, claiming their car broke down or their bank account was frozen.
And that desperate plea for help arises in the exact same ongoing chat thread where you were just wishing them happy birthday 3 weeks ago.
Exactly.
The context just completely bypasses your normal security filters.
The psychological violation there is profound. And the ecosystem is designed to extract value multiple times. Like, we see a huge surge in account recovery scams, too.
Oh, how does that work?
Well, when a user realizes they are locked out of their account, they often complain about it publicly on a different platform, like X or Reddit.
Oh, right. Asking for help.
And fraud rings monitor those platforms for keywords. Fake support agents swoop in, offering to recover the hijacked account. They simply steal more credentials or charge exorbitant fees, basically victimizing the person a second time.
Unbelievable. But the ultimate exploitation of this inherited trust, though, based on the data, is romance fraud.
Oh, absolutely.
The 2025 FTC data explicitly states that 60% of all consumers who reported losing money to a romance scam said the manipulation began on social media.
60%?
Yeah. And Messenger is uniquely dangerous here because it allows a casual public interaction, like just a comment on a photo, to seamlessly evolve into a highly intimate private relationship that criminals will sustain for months before asking for a single dime.
A compromised profile provides the criminal with a reusable digital identity that comes preloaded with a built-in network of potential victims. And what we consistently see in these long con romance and investment scams is a deliberate algorithmic tactic of platform migration.
Moving them around.
Yes. A victim might click a sponsored ad on Facebook. The initial grooming conversation happens on Messenger. But within a week, the scammer insists on moving the chat to WhatsApp.
Operationally, why force that migration? Is it just to make the victim feel like they've entered a more exclusive, intimate space?
Well, the illusion of exclusivity is a key psychological driver, for sure. It isolates the victim from their normal social feeds. But honestly, the primary reason is operational security.
Oh, because of the encryption.
Exactly. WhatsApp features end-to-end encryption. Once the conversation moves there, Meta's automated safety systems are completely blinded. The platform can no longer scan the text for known fraud scripts or malicious links.
Wow.
Furthermore, it fragments the forensic evidence.
Making it harder to track.
Exactly. By the time the victim realizes their life savings are gone, the original Facebook ad has been deleted, the compromised Messenger account has been abandoned, and the final transactional demands exist only on an encrypted WhatsApp thread.
And they will even pull the victim into fake WhatsApp group chats, right?
Oh, all the time.
The victim thinks they're joining a community of fellow crypto investors, but every other quote-unquote person in that group is just a controlled persona operated by the exact same scam center.
Yep. They orchestrate fake consensus.
Right. So if the victim gets nervous about wiring money, five different fake accounts chime in to share their own fabricated success stories, basically just soothing the victim's anxiety.
It's a closed-loop ecosystem of deception.
Which brings us to the absolute elephant in the room. If this is happening on an industrial scale, why are the massive tech and financial institutions failing to shut down the factory floor?
You really have to look at the sheer industrial capacity of the adversary here. In 2025 alone, Meta reported removing more than 159 million scam advertisements.
159 million.
And they disabled 10.9 million accounts directly associated with criminal scam centers.
10.9 million accounts. I mean, that implies a staggering level of automation and manpower.
Yeah, we are not dealing with a lone hacker in a basement wearing a hoodie. We are dealing with transnational criminal syndicates that operate with the efficiency of Fortune 500 SaaS companies.
It's corporate.
Highly corporate. Yeah. There is intense criminal specialization. It operates exactly like an assembly line.
How so?
Well, one distinct department's only job is to deploy malware and acquire compromised accounts. Then they package those accounts and sell them to a marketing department that buys the targeted ads.
Wow.
When a victim clicks, the loot is passed to a closer department operating out of a massive compound, running translated scripts to build the relationship. And finally, a completely separate money laundering department manages the cryptocurrency cash outs and mule accounts.
And the volume of money moving through this factory is just staggering. The UK Finance 2025 data showed £576.4 million lost specifically in authorized push payment fraud, with 66% of those cases originating online.
Right.
Wait, hold on. Let me stop you right there. Because when we talk about authorized push payment fraud, and people blame the banks for missing this.
Yeah.
If I am sitting on my couch holding my own iPhone, I log into my real banking app using my Face ID, and I manually press the send button to transfer $10,000 to a new account, isn't the bank's security system doing exactly what it is designed to do by letting my money move?
You have zeroed in on the central paradox of this entire crisis.
Right, because it's me doing it.
Exactly. From a purely technical binary standpoint, the authentication is 100% successful. The bank systems verified that it is the legitimate customer using their registered device from their usual IP address.
So the bank thinks everything is fine.
The control failure occurs because the bank cannot see that the customer's understanding of reality has been entirely manufactured through months of digital deception.
The bank doesn't have access to the victim's WhatsApp history. They don't know the victim's has been staring at a fake crypto dashboard for 3 weeks.
Exactly. The bank is completely blind to the context. They just see a properly authenticated customer authorizing a payment. Furthermore, the scam centers actively coach victims on how to bypass bank security.
Oh, they prep them.
They provide scripts. If the bank teller asks why the customer is wiring $50,000, the scammer has already instructed the victim to label it as, you know, family support or home renovation costs.
Wow.
And the receiving bank is equally blind. Their systems just see inbound payments that are immediately dispersed into a complex web of mule networks.
So we have established a fairly terrifying reality here. We have an uncrackable scam infrastructure, astronomical financial losses, and a massive blind spot where tech and finance basically operate in complete isolation from one another.
Yes.
So how do we dismantle the factory floor? The source material outlines a framework heavily influenced by incoming regulations like the UK Online Safety Act, which demands platforms assess how their systems actively facilitate fraud.
Right.
And they propose a resilient six-layer defense stack.
Well, regulation is forcing the conversation, but legislation alone doesn't write the code. This requires active, synchronized implementation across six distinct layers, spanning both the tech and financial sectors.
So what does this all mean? Let's run a hypothetical victim through these layers to see how it's supposed to work.
Okay, let's do it.
The scammer tries to buy a fraudulent ad for a fake AI investment. What happens at layer one?
So layer one is platform prevention. The social media company's algorithms should vet the advertiser, recognize the deepfake video, and block the ad from ever being published.
Okay, but let's say the scammer is using a highly reputable, hijacked business account, and the ad slips through.
It happens.
Right. The ad is live, I seed my feed, I click it, and the scammer tries to immediately move me off Messenger onto WhatsApp.
Okay, so that triggers layer two, which is friction at high-risk moments. The platform systems detect the behavioral anomaly like a rapid push to an encrypted channel, and they inject severe friction.
Like a warning.
A massive, undismissible warning flashes on the screen, explaining that this specific pattern is heavily linked to investment fraud.
Okay, but I'm already hypnotized by the promise of massive returns, right? So I ignore the warning, I move to WhatsApp, the scammer builds the relationship, and a month later, I log into my banking app to wire them $20,000.
Right, so now the tech platform is blind, so layer three has to catch you.
Which is?
Financial sector behavioral detection. The bank's algorithm analyzes your historical data. It sees you are a 65-year-old teacher who has never purchased cryptocurrency, suddenly attempting to liquidate a large portion of your savings to an unknown overseas account.
So it stops it.
The system pauses the transaction and flags it for human review.
But the scammer coached me. When the fraud analyst calls, I lie and say the money is for my nephew's medical bills. The money leaves my account.
Then we rely on layer four, mule detection on the receiving end.
Ah, the destination bank.
Exactly. The bank that holds the scammer's account must detect the anomaly. A newly opened account suddenly receiving a massive $20,000 deposit that is instantly being split into dozens of smaller crypto purchases, well, that should trigger an immediate freeze on those funds before they can exit the regulated banking system.
Okay, layer five is intelligence sharing, which really seems to be the glue holding this all together. platforms and banks can no longer hoard their data, right?
No, they can't.
They have to exchange the puzzle pieces in real time through secure APIs.
The intelligence sharing is paramount. If the bank identifies a fraudulent destination account, they must instantly feed that data back to the tech platform so the platform can identify the user profile that initiated the scam and just nuke it.
And layer 6 addresses the human element, customer safeguarding. When a bank teller or a fraud team confronts a victim, they cannot just read a liability disclosure and shut off the account.
No, you can't just throw a policy at them.
They must use neutral, trauma-informed questioning. They basically have to gently break the psychological spell for an emotionally invested, heavily coerced victim.
This raises an important question, though.
Yeah.
Looking at this six-layer stack, it is abundantly clear that fighting this is a forced team sport.
Absolutely. The tech companies own the social data and the behavioral context.
And the banks own the transactional data and the financial velocity.
But currently, neither side can see the complete attack chain independently.
Yeah.
The mall security and the bank vault guards don't even have each other's phone numbers.
Which is why latency is the critical question for industry leaders. How quickly can these massive institutions integrate their data and connect the dots before a sponsored ad turns into an irreversible financial tragedy?
Right.
The objective cannot be playing an endless, unwinnable game of whack-a-mole against individual fake profiles. That is just a statistical impossibility when you are facing 10.9 million automated accounts.
You can't outclick them?
No. The objective must be disrupting the underlying operating model.
You have to break the assembly line.
Precisely. The model relies on cheap, targeted acquisition, the manufacturing of trust, migrating to private communication, and frictionless payment conversion.
And if you stop one?
Right. If you introduce friction and data sharing at every single one of those junctures, the cost of acquiring a victim skyrockets, and the criminal factory floor just becomes unprofitable.
The ultimate takeaway from our sources today is that organized crime syndicates love Facebook for the exact same reasons legitimate advertisers do.
It's the perfect tool.
It perfectly blends identity, massive audience reach, seamless commerce, and direct communication into one polished interface. This is a cross-sector financial crime threat, and it absolutely demands a synchronized cross-sector response.
The integration of institutional data really is the only viable defense we have against the integration of platform features by these criminal networks.
Well said. As we wrap up today's deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. One that extends slightly beyond the regulatory solutions we just discussed.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time today talking about how compromised accounts utilize inherited trust to bypass our critical thinking, right?
Yeah, the burglar in your clothes.
Exactly. If our digital identities possess so much inherent power that they can be easily hijacked to financially ruin our own siblings, parents, and closest friends, are we fast approaching a dystopian reality where we need to establish secret safe words with our loved ones?
Oh, wow.
Right. A world where before you loan your brother $100 on an app, you have to call him and ask for a predetermined password just to verify that the person typing on his account is actually him.
It sounds like science fiction, honestly, but given the scale of identity compromise and the incoming wave of AI voice cloning we're seeing, a family safe word might genuinely be the most practical immediate security measure a household can adopt today.
The dark alley isn't a physical place you can avoid anymore. The crime scene really is your digital living room, and the burglar is wearing your friend's face. Keep your eyes open, watch out for the Hollywood sets hiding behind those perfect ads, and we will see you on the next deep dive.